Welcome to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast, where you get help and guidance through the chaos of parenting a child with anxiety or OCD. This show is for educational purposes and is not intended to replace the guidance of a qualified professional. Here's your host, child therapist, Natasha Daniels.
Well, hello there, and welcome to another episode of the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. Today, I want to talk to you about your child's self-confidence and their self-esteem, their self-image, their self-worth. It's all so crucial, especially for our kids with anxiety and OCD, because anxiety and OCD can really hit the self-esteem. And self-esteem and self-confidence is a hard thing anyway if you are a human being, and especially if you're a tween and teen. But when you add and sprinkle in anxiety and OCD on top of all of that, it can be even more difficult. And that is why I invited my guest to come over and talk to us today. Jessie LeBeau is one of today's most highly sought after youth motivational speakers. He's also an author. He has an underdog story kind of like the rest of us, and it inspired him to talk to millions of teens through his speaking, his best-selling books, and his inspirational youth programs. He is one of the world's premier basketball trick artists, which is pretty cool, and he is regularly featured on TV and film and through international tours. And he has created the Attitude is Everything Foundation, which is pretty cool because it's a resource for young people to have ongoing support throughout their difficult teenage years, and it targets the areas of self-esteem, confidence, and mental health, which is truly the name of the game. So I thought he was a perfect person to invite over and have a discussion about how do we boost our child's self-confidence? How do we help them feel more empowered? We have a great discussion about that. He's such a real, raw, honest person to talk to. I just really enjoyed our conversation. It just felt very like, it was like, you're going to be like listening in to like a coffee shop conversation about confidence and how do we help as a parent to improve that. And it's not normally in the ways that we think, you know, just saying you're wonderful at this or you're great at that. It just falls flat. So we're going to dive into that. Before we get started, I do want to thank NoCD for sponsoring this episode. NoCD offers affordable, effective, convenient therapy. They're available in the U.S. and outside of the U.S. as well. You can schedule your free 15-minute consultation to see if NoCD is the right fit for you and your child. Just go to treatmyocd.com. That's treatmyocd.com, and I'll leave a link in the show notes. Also, I always like to kind of share a link before and after my interviews. Check out Jessie LeBeau's stuff. His website is jessielebeau.com. So I'll spell it for you. It's Jessie, J-E-S-S-E, LeBeau, L-E-B-E-A-U.com. And then you can also check out the Attitude is Everything Foundation, which actually has its own website that I will tell you what it is. It is attitudeiseverythingfoundation.org. That's super easy. So check out both of those. They have different information on each one of those. And I'm going to be researching his mentor program because that sounds really interesting. And I'm knee deep in trying to build my child's self-esteem and self-confidence. So without further ado, here is my interview with Jessie. Well, I want to welcome Jessie to the show. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Yeah, I've never talked. I think this is my 357th episode, and I have never talked, I don't believe, about self-confidence and self-esteem.
Well, it's overdue. Let's talk about it.
I know, right? And I thought you're a perfect person to invite on, because this is your wheelhouse as a motivator and youth coach. But before we dive into what we can do as parents to foster self-esteem, I just want to dive into your story a little bit just so we can get some background on you and where you came from.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I'm happy to do that. So my story is one that I feel like is relatable. I feel like everyone, do you consider yourself an underdog? Have you ever considered yourself an underdog at any point in your life?
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? I've found from going and speaking to so many people over the years that almost everyone sees themselves as an underdog. And it doesn't matter where you live, what color your skin is, how much money your parents did or didn't have. Like, there's people that come from these families that are, you know, generational wealth. And they're like, yeah, but I have a speech impediment, or I can't make friends and I have a hard time dealing with anxiety and social situations. So even though on the outside from social media, it may seem like everyone's got the perfect life and everything's going great, almost everyone can relate to being an underdog. So that's all my story is. I think it's a kind of your classic, if you will, underdog story. So I'm happy to tell it.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
I grew up on a little island in Alaska, and the name of the island was Penick. And on Penick Island, there was no roads or stores or anything like that. We had to take a boat every day just to get over to school. And growing up, I didn't know anything different. I thought this was just totally what everyone did. And when we got to town, it was one road going left, one road going right, four stoplights, and then a fence on either end. You were trapped there about 15, 20 miles of road.
Wow.
So for all of these reasons, there was a lot of problems with drugs, alcohol, depression, suicide, you name it. And the thing that I really struggled with was I felt isolated and alone and trapped in this little place. And I felt like I didn't have the opportunity to go and do the things that I wanted to do. And there was one thing that I really wanted to do, and that was be a basketball player. That was my big dream. That's what I started to tell people I wanted to do. And of course, especially around the teenage years, people are going to tell you how unrealistic that is. And the thing that I didn't mention yet is that I was by far the shortest, smallest kid, smaller than all the boys, smaller than all the girls, the smallest kid in the school. So they told me in not so nice of words that I was too little, I wasn't big enough, I wouldn't be strong enough, and I would never have what it takes to make it as a basketball player. And there was this one particular incident that happened with a bully who was a year older than me. And it involved me going up and trying to get a rebound at lunch and him just towering over me and snatching the ball away and having a few choice words for me. And I remember feeling just absolutely tiny, just feeling embarrassed in front of the kids at lunch. And I just wanted to disappear. And it was in that moment, moving forward, that I thought back to that this was when I made a big decision in my life. And I didn't make it right in that second, but as I reflected on it later, I said, I can either listen to everyone else who's telling me I can't do all these things, all the outside voices, or I can choose to be the master of my own attitude. I can throw away those excuses. I can tune out those things that aren't supportive of what I want to do, and I could create the life that I want, my dream life. And that turned a corner for me where I became just this little basketball guy that was always carrying around a basketball, was always dribbling it. People thought I was crazy. They thought I was nuts. But I realized at that early age that if I wasted all my time worrying about what everyone else thought, that I'd never get what I wanted out of my own life. And so that was a big, big pivotal moment for me. And to make a long story short, I was able to use basketball to have an awesome high school career and then get a college scholarship and get my education paid for. And then after that, to start breaking into street ball professionally and travel all over the world with one of my favorite NBA players of all time, Allen Iverson. And it led me to get into entertainment, where I was in commercials and movies and TV shows with people like the very first one was with Kobe Bryant. And then I had a day where Heidi Klum fed me cheeseburgers all day for Carl's Jr. I got to be in a movie called Thunderstruck. I became friends with these guys from big shows through basketball, Josh Hutcherson, Michael B. Jordan, and worked with just about everyone you could think of in the entertainment industry. And it was all because of basketball, the thing I was told my whole life by so many people that I wasn't supposed to be able to do. So, that was my story. That was my underdog. And it led me afterwards to not make it to the NBA, which was my big dream, but to pivot. And from there, I just started to get put in front of these schools and these crowds, and they'd hand me a microphone and I just kind of would go roll with it. And then I realized I had an opportunity to do more than just entertain with basketball tricks, but I could actually write a book, I could start speaking, and I could use my story to have an impact because kids were so fascinated by the basketball tricks. So that was kind of the way I get their attention. And then I come and I share an underdog story and talk about the things that I learned along my journey and the things I did right and the things I did wrong. So yeah, it's been 10 years since I made that decision to go all in working with teens and families. And I never would imagine that I'd be doing what I'm doing today, but it's been an unbelievable experience and I'm so grateful for it. And I still get to use basketball almost every day. So it's pretty cool.
I love that. And I do feel like that normalization of a skill, or a passion, I think that can speak to kids so much that, you have this thing that you love, because I think that kids typically have something that they're passionate about. And it's interesting listening to your story, because you're right. I do feel like we all have some sort of underdog story most of the time, where we feel like we're at a disadvantage, or our dreams can't be obtained. And I wonder, you being so isolated and being in Alaska, and Alaska is isolating alone in and of itself. I can't imagine being on an island separate from Alaska. I mean, like, talk about isolation. What it was inside of you that told you not to listen to everybody else and that you can do this, because I feel often that internal voice is not there for some kids.
Yeah, that's huge. And I have a friend, he played he's a football player, won a Super Bowl, and he told me, Jesse, you need to talk to yourself, not listen to yourself. Because if you listen to yourself and you let those scary and negative thoughts that you have that come into all of our minds, it's not going to be good. But if you can talk yourself and you can go like, hey, no, you can do this. You can believe in yourself, and that's something you just have to work at. And I credit my parents very, very much for that. Having supportive parents that believed in me and they were always there to be like, you know what? If this is what you want to do, then how can we help you? All right, let's get to the gym and I'll rebound for you. Let's practice. What can we do? What's a movie we could watch that's about basketball that will be fun and get you going? So I think that's a really big part of it. And also the thing that I've been absolutely obsessed, so I'm really excited by your question, is that I see from all the kids that I go and speak at about three or four schools or youth events a month. So I'm speaking to thousands of kids every month and then talking to tons of parents. And what I've seen is though, although we have social media and we have a phone and everyone's connected more than ever before in the history of the world, there's never been more people that feel disconnected during this time. And people are lonely, and that's leading to them being depressed and anxious and stressed and feeling like they aren't enough and they don't fit in. And so that's a real problem. And that was exactly how I felt. So I can totally relate, when I was on the little island in Alaska and I felt alone and isolated, like you said. But I made the decision to team up and I did it with basketball. And that what I mean by that is I found the group of people that I was going to spend time with in person. And that was the people that were in the basketball world. And by doing that, it built my own little tribe. It built my own little community of people that we could be there for each other when things were going tough and someone was going through a tough time, whether it was sports related or life related. And we could be there and we could celebrate each other's wins along the way. And that is such a huge part of life. And that's something that's lacking in so many young people and old people today is they haven't found that tribe, that community. This is great, you and me talking through a screen, but it can't replace in-person human interaction and connection. It's hardwired in each and every one of our DNAs, and we need that. So that would be my big thing for parents listening to this or kids themselves is they need to team up. They need to find their tribe. They need to find that group that they want to hang out with, whether it's a sport, whether it's an after-school activity, whether it's a youth group, whether it's volunteering and helping other people. And make that happen so that you belong to something that's bigger than yourself, because the quality of our life really comes down to the quality of our relationships. And so if you're someone out there or have a kid out there who's struggling with that, that's okay. You aren't alone. There is hope. And that would be the biggest first step is like, let's find that thing. Let's brainstorm. Let's put a list together. What is in our area? What can we do? What have we tried? What do we like? What did we like? What could we try? Those are the first huge step in turning that around if you find your child in that situation.
Yeah, and it's tricky. And it's interesting, because I had someone else on the podcast who reminds me a similar story. He was someone who struggles with OCD, and he's I don't I think he's I don't even know. I think he's a young adult. He might actually still be a teenager. But got into wrestling and found like wrestling as his tribe and really boosted him as well. And he was very empowered by that and wanted to kind of be an advocate for other people with OCD. So I feel like there's a message there. I and I I tend to hear this more from men, I think, that I interview, that like they find their tribe. And maybe this is because women and girls, and I'm totally stereotyping right now, but they get a little more catty with each other, and it doesn't always feel like this lift you up situation. And so they have to find the right group. The other thing I was thinking about as you're talking about it is, and I was thinking about my 14-year-old son, who, has a history of bullying and has social anxiety. And there's this fear of just even putting yourself out there and connecting with other people. It almost is like they have to start with themselves and build up those skills before they can even subject themselves to the possible rejection of other people, which is so hard to do.
Is your 14-year-old son a freshman this year?
No, he will be next year, but he's
Yes, he's
doing
eighth
online.
grade.
Yep, eighth
Got
grade.
it. And is he on social media? Like, what's his relation? And if you don't mind me asking, I'm just curious now. What is his relationship with his phone, social media? Because that's kind of that age where, I mean, most kids are on there. So I'm not judging. I'm just curious if we can get and kind of learn more about him today.
I'm always an open book. He's actually like a very young 14-year-old, so he is more about online gaming and more like the online game Discord, world. No social media presence, doesn't he just watches YouTube,
A lot of YouTube.
a lot of YouTube.
And so putting himself out there, because that it's a tough age. Kids can be particularly cruel. And like you said, not to stereotype or generalize, but girls, they attack each other's social structure. That's exactly how they go after each other. You know, that's a lesson we just did this past week, last week with our group of kids, is we call it the winner's circle. So who are the five people that you're going to spend the most time with in your life? Are they adding value to your life? Are they supportive? Are they happy when you go through good things? Or are they jealous? Do they tear you down? Do they talk behind your back? Because it makes such a big difference. And we've all heard that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, right? But it really is so true, whether it's your health, whether it's your relationships, whether it's the success in your career and in your life and when you're a kid in school and sports and all of those things. We had a couple parents we were talking to the other day, and they have a 14-year-old daughter, and she loves to sing, and she's got a great voice, but she gave it up recently because she came to the conclusion that she'll never be as good as Taylor Swift. So that's the bar, and whether you think Taylor Swift is an amazing singer or not is up for debate. And I won't say either way because I don't want to be attacked. But she has great songs that people love and are catchy. But you're comparing yourself to literally maybe the most successful and famous person on the planet, and you're a kid. And that's the tricky part with having the internet, with having YouTube and what you're watching. And so when you're saying like, oh man, he's afraid to put himself out there because of ridicule, that breaks my heart. But I think that is the majority, by far the majority of kids out there, because it's always been hard to do that. But it's especially hard now when you can look and someone else, you know, is better looking. It has more followers, gets more likes, is more popular, dresses better, has a family that has more things or whatever. So it makes it that much more difficult. And that's why I was curious about the social media, because I see that correlate a lot of times. But my thing for that is, and you've heard that, is everything is just on that other side of that thing that scares you the most, right? And the only way to overcome that fear and build that confidence and get that self-esteem that we're talking about today is you got to rack up some wins. They can be big wins, but most of the time they're going to be little itty bitty small wins. They're going to add up and compound over time. So the hard truth is, as much as you love your son, you can't give him confidence. You can tell him he's great. You could tell him he's so smart. You could tell him he's so great at video games. You could tell him all the positive things. And some of them may be true, and some of them may, you're just trying to be a good parent and be like, you know, build him up and make him feel good about himself. But the only way that he can have that self-esteem is he can't get it from mom, can't get it from dad, can't get it from coach, can't get it from teacher. He has to earn it by accomplishing things. And so in this situation, maybe it's just putting himself out there in the smallest way. So maybe, given not knowing any of the particulars of his life, but maybe it's, hey, I am just going to volunteer and help tutor another kid, or I'm going to go sit with a friend group at lunch, or invite a new friend group at lunch to sit with us if he has that group, and putting himself out there trying out for the team. I don't even care if I make it. I'm just going to go try out. And it is your duty, in my opinion, as a parent, to put your kid in these situations where they aren't just always in their comfort zone. And this is something that I see so much, and it's parents with the best of intentions. They love their kids so much. They don't want them to hurt. They don't want them to be in pain. And so they'll just let their kid not have to go to school in person anymore because they're having a hard time and not connecting with kids. They'll let them just be on their phone as much as they want, kind of keeping an eye on their activity because they'll fight them when they don't have their phone. And they let their kid, literally, we go, if you leave it up to your kid, then what is going to change? Do you think that the teenager who has a developing brain is going to be like, you know what, I could sit around and watch Netflix, play video games, go on YouTube and just do whatever I want, or I can actually do something that's uncomfortable, that isn't going to be fun, but it's going to make me more prepared for life ahead. And of course, the kid is going to choose the path of least resistance because YouTube, video games, Netflix, social media, all those things are really fun and they're really addictive. And most of the other kids who are having all the issues that we're talking about are doing those things too. So it's a tough balance. And I believe the parents that have the best success and see their kids thrive and excel and build that confidence is a balance of like, okay, yeah, we're not going to go crazy. You don't have to run a marathon, but you are going to have to do things that are uncomfortable because guess what? You and me as adults, we do so many things every single day that we don't want to do, right? So it's like, I don't want to get up at a certain time. I'd rather sleep in. I don't want to go and exercise and work out, but I need to for my body. I don't want to eat certain foods and not eat other foods. But these are all part of being a functioning, happy, successful adult. And so if you aren't doing that as a kid, you get out into the world and it's like, well, I've never had to do any of these things. And that's why kids are just melting at someone that even just has a different opinion than them. And it's like the most crazy thing. It's the best of intentions, but just the wrong practices from parents. And it's coming from a place of love, which is the tough thing because you don't want to see your kids sad. You don't want to see them not fitting in. You don't want to see them, struggling from different things. And so you bring these things with love, but you got to toe that line of being their friend and being the parent and follow your gut. And only you as the parent can really determine for each kid where that exactly falls, because it might be different for each kid.
Yeah, and it definitely is. And I think, and I hear what you're saying. And I think the tricky part is with some of the kids, with the parents listening, their kids are, severely mentally ill. A lot of them are debilitated. A lot of them are on online schools because they, just they can't function in a school environment. But I do agree. I think like finding what they are interested in and tapping it out. I mean, a lot of times the parents are so exhausted from trying to get them to do therapy and they're trying to get them to take their medication. Like there's just so many layers already that are happening that self-esteem and self-confidence are like backburnered. I think it's a key component. I think it's part of the journey. It's not a separate aspect, but finding something that your child is into, so you're getting a little bit less resistance. And I know I've done this with my son. I mean, he is doing online school, partly because of the bullying. I just, it was like he needed to be able to heal, and he needed wins. He needed small wins. And I said to him, here's the deal. I can get you into an online program. That's really good because he's a straight A student. So I'll get you into like a college level, online program. You have to do all the work. But then we're gonna have to start doing activities outside of the home because you're gonna be isolated. And so I get that because I don't want you to be bullied, but let's talk about things that you're passionate about. And actually he's doing more things now, I feel like, outside of the home that are wins, and he's more willing to do them. And so he'll mention that he's interested, was interested in 3D printing. So I got him a 3D printer. And then I got him an online tutor, so he has, it was hard for him to talk to adults. So he's got this one-on-one interaction with an adult. I found a teen confidence retreat. They do like once a month, they go out and they do something kind of fun, and there's a confidence coach that helps work with them. That's been huge. He only did it once so far. It's once a month. I wish it was every week, but that's been huge too, because like you said, it's like an it's a small win. I can do this. I can be around other people I don't know. He's shown a real good interest in baking. And
Wow.
watching baking shows, and so I'm
On
like,
YouTube, did YouTube kind of find him with that? I'm just
yeah,
curious. I've been hearing that from other kids too this past week, really randomly.
it
Yeah.
was
Okay.
100%
Pretty cool.
YouTube. It started
Yeah.
with wanting to make candy, and like these like weird candies that it did not work out. And then he's watching this guy who's a YouTuber who does a lot of cooking, and so I'm like, I'm sure there's a local culinary place that has cooking
Yeah.
classes. So he starts that on Thursday. So I think you're right. I
Awesome.
think it's like offering these like little, oh, we started archery on Saturday mornings. We're all
Oh,
learning
that's a
how to
great
do.
one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's good at it, and so you never know. It's like just trying to give our kids these opportunities, these like little strings, and see if you can pull on it and see if something comes of it.
Kudos to you, because I hear that too with a lot of kids that are doing homeschool or online learning, that they're like, well, the crazy thing is it kind of has this stigma to it of like, oh, well, they're gonna be like not able like to be social and kind of like withdrawn, like weirdos, you know. But the kids that I know that did homeschool actually were more involved doing things like sports at several different schools and being involved in the dances and the activities and these things that you're talking about. So that I think that's awesome that you're able to find that, okay, hey, let's get this for the learning part. But then also it's an important part of life for you to go and have these experiences with other people. Because the only way he's going to get confident talking to some adults, and the only way he's going to be able to handle some of this social stuff that's making him nervous, is to go and do it and see, like, oh, it's not that bad. Or go do it and have it go really bad and being like, huh, I didn't like that, but that's the worst it is. Like, I didn't die. Like, everything's okay. And that's just part of it. Almost every social interaction is a little bit awkward and weird at some point in it, you know? So those are great. Great. I'm really glad to see that he's still having that part going on.
Yeah, and you just wait, kind of like what happened to you. You just wait for that spark to ignite, because that part we don't get to control is, I'm going to give you opportunities, and then you do, we'll see what lights you up, and we'll just support you in that. The other thing that I think is hard sometimes, and I really like how you talk about attitude is everything, because I feel like so many of us in this community that I talk to is dealing with kids who kind of give up before they begin. And I feel like the anxiety and OCD already wears them down. I have three kids, and I feel like they all have different attitudes of whether they can handle something. Like, their resilience is different, each one of them. It's like almost like a genetic aspect to their personality. And how do you help a child who is an all or nothing thinker? They give up before they even begin. They don't have that attitude that you did, that was like, everyone's telling me I can't, and so I'm gonna show them. I wonder how, like, as parents, I know we're one piece of the small puzzle, but I wonder what we can do as parents to kind of facilitate that.
Yeah, that's a great one. And I want to rewind a little bit to the confident thing, and then I'll come right back into this, because I think it'll kind of fit naturally. But the whole reason why I focus on confidence is I went over the course of 10 years to, hundreds of schools and talked to all these people. And no matter where I was in the country, no matter what age I was talking to, I kept hearing the same thing over again. And it was mental health, mental health, mental health. And this was before the pandemic came around and it became kind of a buzzword, and it got a lot worse for most people. And it was finally like, okay, we need to like figure out a solution for this, because it's becoming clear this is just like an epidemic all over the place that people are struggling with. And when we really dove into the research, we saw if we could only help one area of a kid's life, the best area is confidence. Because that spills over into almost every other area of their life, right? So if whether it's, something as extreme as gang violence or self-harm or the bullying situations like we're talking about, you name it, the kids that believe in themselves, to the like genuinely in themselves, not what mom and dad are telling them, but they've have that confidence, they care less about what their peers think about them, good or bad, right? And they're more likely to be leaders and less likely to be followers. So that was kind of why we honed in on confidence so much. And how the attitude works its way into the equation is that was the big life lesson that my dad passed along to me. And he really taught it to me through sports. So because I was so into sports as a kid, we would go and watch the older kids on the baseball field and on the basketball court. And we wouldn't watch the game the way that a normal audience member would watch a game. We were watching the better players and we were seeing how did they respond when things didn't go their way. So not when they hit the game-winning hit, not when they knocked down the big shot, but what did they do when they struck out or they didn't get a call or they made a bad pass? Did they yell at the umpire and the referee? Did they storm off the field with a bad attitude? Did they go and high-five their teammate and be encouraging? Or was it all about them? And the big takeaway from that is your biggest advantage in sport while the person you're going against is having a bad attitude and wasting energy and time and focus. If you cannot do that, it gives you a huge advantage. And more importantly, it's a reflection of how you're going to be in your life. So the pillars of what I believe and what we teach is confidence, grit and resilience, like you were just mentioning, and then this attitude piece. And the beautiful thing about attitude is you say a lot of this thinking is all or nothing. And I know that every situation is different, but we'll kind of just look at it from this landscape. Is that is the one thing in life that you can control. Because unfortunately, a lot of these situations that our listeners are listening to right now, it is so unfair. They are so exhausted. Like you said, this is just like a secondary or even third, thing to think about. They're just trying to get through the day-to-day of dealing with these things. But the reality and the truth is, if you can start teaching them that you can't always control what's going to happen to you, but you can always choose to control how you respond with your attitude, it is going to make their life and your life so much better. And that's tough to get through. A kid doesn't always want to hear that, especially from mom and dad. But the other best way you can impart that is to start living it in your own life. That's the number one thing I always tell parents. We always want to say, do as I say, not as I do. It doesn't work like that. They're watching what you do. And if you're on the phone at dinner and checking emails, all those things, and you're telling them to get off the phone, it's going to be one in one ear and out the other ear because they're like, well, you're doing it. And so why can't I do it? So when it comes to attitude, it's the exact same thing. And you know who makes a living going and speaking about attitude? Me. You know who struggles with their attitude every single day? Me. It is hard work. It is so tough. I literally, no exaggeration, struggle with it every single day. But I'm aware of it and I work on it. And the thing that a parent could do when you mess up with your attitude, whether it's the on traffic in the car or something not working out at home or frustrated and bumping heads, use those times you make those mistakes as an example and a tool to be like, man, look, this is hard. I'm struggling with it. I just messed up. That wasn't the right way to handle that situation. And I want to be a better example for you. And I'm calling myself out. And I just want you to know this is how I should have handled it. And next time this happens, I'm going to try my very best to handle it in this particular way. And when a kid sees your humility and your humanity, those are the powerful moments when they see you more than just being mom or dad who are there to do and provide everything for them, but as an actual human who loves them and would do anything to try to have them be happy and successful in their life. So it's easier said than done, for sure. It's definitely hard to put your faults out there, but it is such a powerful tool that you can use. And if you do it, it'll make a big difference with your relationship and your kid's life.
Yeah, and it does actually feel good, I think, in a repair sort of way, because I know I do this with my kids and especially my son, because we can go head to head. And I think it's hard initially if you have if you're coming from a place of, I'm the parent, you're the child down here, and I am not going to show any of my flaws or my humanity, like you said. But I do feel like there's if you can get over that, I feel like there is, it does feel good on both ends. Not that you, I think sometimes parents want something from it. They want the forgiveness. They want the acknowledgement of it. It's okay, mom. And I think it's important to go into it without, I'm giving to get. It's like, I'm just going to show, I'm going to say, you know what? That was an ugly moment just then, wasn't it? And that was not how I wanted to show up for this. And I'm sorry. I'm frustrated. I got work going on. I've got this going on. And I should have taken a break and just walked away for a second before snapping at you. And that you didn't deserve that. And that didn't feel good for me either. And I just want you to know where I was at. And I think some parents will do that
Powerful.
part, right? But then they're waiting for the child to be like, it's okay, mom. And We have to let go of that too. You may not
Yeah.
get that. What I've seen with my son actually is I've done that so much that he's starting to do that himself. And that's really the ultimate goal is for him to be able to say, whoa, that was an ugly moment, or I just lost it and I'm sorry. I've actually saw him doing that to his sister recently, which is like, who is this person? You know, where he apologized for kind of targeting her for literally no reason. But
Yeah.
just that ability to repair is such a beautiful personality trait and skill to be
How proud
humble.
of him were you in that moment?
Yeah, I was
I could tell by
very,
the way you're talking about it.
yeah, I was like, this is working. It's slow. It's slow. And it feels like a trickle. Because, like you said, I think on the surface, we just think as a mom or a dad, we're going to just cheerlead you into self-confidence. And it falls flat. You know, you're so pretty. You're so good. You're so good at that. You're so great at that. I'm so proud of you for this. And I mean, it's not that we don't necessarily have to say those things, but it's not the magic sauce. The magic sauce is the stuff you're talking about. It's slow and it stews and it takes time, which can be a little frustrating.
Yeah. Well, we need to give you a lot of credit for that because you're literally an awesome example of what we're just talking about, of they're watching what you're doing and they're going to pattern you as the parent. They're going to mirror you. So the reason why he did that is because that is what you're using with him. And so he's going and doing that, which is unbelievable at 14, but that's, and unfortunately, the thing that I've learned, and I think we all kind of pick up as we get older and get more life experience, is that people are really messed up. And I don't think I've ever met someone who has it all figured out. You think you get a certain age or a certain point in your life and you're like, all right, I got to figure it out. Everyone's kind of faking it and figuring it out as they go. And that's from someone on the bottom of the totem pole to someone on the very top.
So true.
And so I think some of these tools, you reminded me of, I have a dear friend. Her name is Dr. Elizabeth Lombardo, if anyone wants to check her out. And she goes around and teaches this thing called the red zone. So not the football red zone. I know we just had the Super Bowl, but the psychological red zone. So if you or anyone, a kid, feels in the like anxiety state, stress, anxious, depressed, and you feel like a 7 out of 10 or higher, then that's what we consider the red zone. And when you're in that red zone, you don't want to let anything in and out of your mouth. Words, the foods that you're using, substances. This is when you make bad decisions. This is when you say things that you're going to regret, like the ugly moment that you were talking about earlier. And so it gives you some tools to be like, okay, here's what I know. For me in the red zone, I need to go on a quick walk. I need to go do some breathing exercises. I need to go maybe lay down and just meditate for 5 minutes. I need to put on my red zone music playlist. And then you could communicate that back and forth with your loved ones, whether it's your spouse or your kids, and they could communicate that with you. And so when it starts to elevate a little bit and hey, you didn't do the homework. Hey, you didn't follow through on that thing that you didn't take out the garbage and it's escalating. Hey, mom, I hear you. Give me 10 minutes. I'm in the red zone right now. And we will actually have parents come back to us and say, hey, this is what happened this weekend. It was pretty cool. So
I
I
like
think if
that.
everyone could learn this red zone technique, that it would change the world, and not just for kids, for everyone.
Yeah, and just having language, I like that because I think the language, you know, you just don't have your language when you're in the red zone, you know? And so something that's short and is like kind of a shortcut to, I'm not okay right now and I need some space. I love that. In my house, we normally do like a visual with my hand. I'll be like, I'm here, I'm
Here.
here. Yeah, but I think red zone's even better because sometimes, and even sometimes my kids will be like, where are you at, mom? Like if I'm being short, you know, and they'll want the
Yeah.
visual with my hand to show I'm about to explode or not. But I
I love
like
that communication that you guys have in your house. That's pretty awesome that they're asking you, "Hey, how are you doing, mom? Where are we at? Where are we at?" I hope they're not doing it to push your buttons like, "Okay, I could push a little bit further." I don't think that's
Yeah.
their reason, but
I
that's
think
great.
it's an early detection system. I think they're just wanting to know. Not that I explode, but they, you know, not all the time. Yeah, but it's the life of living with a therapist, a child therapist. So but I do like that. I think giving our kids language, like the red zone, I could see my son using that. I could see him saying something like, I'm in the red zone. And that's probably the only amount that he'd be able to get out of his mouth when he's feeling, you know. But I also like the way you said, like, that's not the time that you digest things, because we've been talking a lot about addiction and alcohol and drugs. And because that's really kind of the next chapter, a lot of times is, you know, when you are not confident and you are down and you are depressed, what crutches do you use? And for me, just planting those seeds as well of, we don't want to reach out and grab something to make ourselves feel better that alters our state of consciousness, when we're, it's an unhealthy coping mechanism. So I kind of like the way you added that in there.
You don't want to have those conversations or make those decisions during those times for sure. Yeah, that's when you're looking back at it and you're like, oh man, I wish I wouldn't have done that. That was not the right time and not what I would do if I was totally thinking and in my right state of mind. But with all these things, I think even just like back to confidence and that kind of thing, and back to attitude, is you just have to understand that it's a thing first. So it's like, okay, cool. Like, man, I was in the red zone. That's why I did that. Or until you even realize that that's a thing, then you can't really maneuver it. And that's why people always talk about I need tools and I need skills that I can have for my teenager or for my child, because you do. It's important, and it comes down to, all right, like how can I handle these situations? But the first step is recognizing, like, ooh, I want to have a bad attitude right now. I could feel it coming on. But this is a choice, and I am going to choose that I'm going to take the high road in this situation, and I'm going to have a good attitude, even though, given the situation, I shouldn't have to have a good attitude. But I know that it's going to make my life better to not be Larry David and running around exasperated and upset, although it makes great TV, and I laugh a lot at Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's a miserable way to live.
it is, actually.
It's time we put help directly in our kids' hands. Introducing Crushing OCD Course for Kids and Teens.
It was way more helpful than all the other therapy we've ever done because we didn't really know what to do. So we weren't really doing it before. So the course helped to figure out what the exposures are and how to do them.
We're not in therapy and find it really hard to find an ERP trained therapist here. So we're currently with like the public health service, but again, they don't seem to be trained in ERP. It's filled that gap that we don't have that was desperately needed.
This was really well timed for us to use between therapists and to help us like get off to a good start with this new practice.
It was easy to use. I was able to do it from my phone or also on the computer.
There's different ages, so there were younger kids, there were teenagers, and so that was really nice too, to have a variety of ages where it wasn't just geared towards younger kids or older kids. It was a nice variety.
It's helpful for our kids to hear it from this like third party as opposed to just us saying it.
I really like the offense and defense method. I love working on poking at OCD while it's sleeping. It makes it a little bit easier to do and it's kind of fun. I'm planning on using it to work on my fear of like holding your touching batteries and stuff like that.
So it was really helpful and I think a lot of other kids would like it. I thought that I was like the only one who had worrying about the weather and stuff. And then there was somebody else on there who worried about the same thing, which was really helpful.
Seems less scary to work on stuff now that I've watched this class and I'm more interested to work on it.
I like trying to do more exposures still and going to, before I wasn't, I just didn't want to do them.
I've worked on some of my bigger compulsions and been successful.
I realized that it was helpful to do like the exposures before. It was like really, really hard. It's still hard, but it's helpful to know that I need to do them.
Before, there would be a lot of battles about it. So it is definitely less loggerheads.
Really, really good course and super helpful.
Definitely would recommend this. It's really easy to follow. It's in nice bite-sized videos. I really like the worksheets that go along with it. And I think it's really helpful.
To learn more about this course and register your child or teen, go to atparentingsurvivalschool.com.
And it actually, it feeds into the low self-esteem because there's this emotional hangover afterwards of why did I act like that? Or why did I say that? Or I'm a burden on my family or I'm a burden on my friends. And so it just digs a deeper hole. And so I think that compassion of catching yourself and then also that compassion of I lost it and that, you know what, it was shorter than yesterday. And, I was able to use this skill at least, and getting them to see the wins in the loss, I think is important too, because sometimes our kids don't, you know, they're all or nothing thinkers. And they're just like, I can't control myself. I did it again. I lost myself again.
Yeah, they're their own harshest critic.
They are. Yeah.
Well, you know, here's one I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on. I see today, especially with the internet, I'm going to harp on that, that kids are so quick to self-diagnose. And not, again, not just kids, people, right? Mm-hmm. It's just so quick to self-diagnose. I'm this, I'm that, I'm this. And then they start telling them that story over and over again. And I remember years ago, we worked with a girl and we had this talk where the parents always introduced their daughter as, this is so-and-so, she's our shy one. So now it's just reinforcing this thing over and over and over again, where even if she didn't want to be shy, her identity is kind of built on this self story that she's telling that's been influenced by the people around her in her family.
Yeah.
And I think one of the biggest things that can make a huge difference in a young person's life or any person's life is to go from someone who needs help, mm-hmm. someone who's constantly needs help, I have this disorder, I have this problem, to someone who helps other people.
Yeah, it's huge.
I've seen it on all walks of life, from the people who have like the craziest, biggest things going on to the kid who's stressed because they have a 4.0, but they need to get a 4.6 to get into that Ivy League school. And one piece of advice that I could almost give for any situation is get them going and doing something for other people. Yeah. Whether it's volunteering, whether it's helping out, whether it's just something really small, if they can do that, it takes them from being someone who needs help to someone mm-hmm. who helps other people. And in that, you're going to find gratitude, which you hear people talking about all the time. And we know is just an absolute game changer. It also puts your problems into perspective, because mm-hmm. I know from what you've shared with me that people listening right now have some of the most difficult, unfair things and situations with their kids and their families. But there's always people out there that have it worse and mm-hmm. would give anything to trade places with you. And so if you can find a way to make, all right, this is what it is, but how can we still find a way to help other people? And a lot of times that thing that you struggle with, that thing that's the hardest and most difficult thing, ends up being your superpower and the thing that, oh, you went through that thing that was so difficult and hard. Well, now you're so tough and strong, you can encourage and help other people who are going through things just as hard or almost as hard because you can relate to their story. So it seems counterintuitive, but I think it's one of the biggest cheat codes out there, because when you help other people, it makes you feel so good. And it's hard to feel sorry about yourself and your situation when you're going and you're helping other people that are having a difficult time too.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's that shifting that victim mentality to give back. And I like what you said about, you know, owning sometimes when your identity is your disorder, you know, and we can do this as parents when we're, you know, pathologizing our kids, just because it's everywhere and it's everything. And our kids are just not, you know, they're struggling with their mental health, and how we frame it can be really important. I always tell my kids, you're more resilient than the average child because you've dealt with, you know, anxiety and OCD. And, you know, we had tragedy. My husband passed away suddenly, and my kids were much more resilient, not to compare, you know, but they were resilient during this crisis, because compared to, you know, when they're in grief group, because this is, and I highlighted that this is something that you show up for every day before this happened. You've learned how to sit with discomfort. You know, you have superpowers. You didn't ask for them. You know, you didn't ask for this invitation of a daily practice to deal with your struggles, but it's what's been given to you. And this is going to make you better in life, because when there's bumps, you're going to be like, I ride bumps all day long. Like, give them to me. So I think how we talk to our kids about their struggles is really important. And I love how you said giving back. I think there's nothing more healing and therapeutic than finding purpose in your pain, you know. And I know that that's what I did as a kid, you know, it's a whole mess of a story, but being able to help others and even raising my own kids with anxiety and OCD and then doing this and having a platform where I'm in the mess and I'm teaching it is very cathartic and very helpful. I think I get as much out of it as other people do. And sometimes we don't think our kids can do that, but they can on so many levels. There are organizations where they can participate, where they can write letters or notes and give them to people. My daughter actually found an organization, and it's just two kids who started this during COVID. She actually needs community hours, to be honest, for National Honor Society.
You're doing it though. She's doing it.
Yeah, but she's doing it. And, you know, and these kids made this organization of like writing letters to people who are, you know, have cancer or military or are in foster care. And there's just beautiful things out there that, you know, your kids don't have to create things from scratch at this point, but giving them a voice and giving them a platform on any level does get them out of that victim mentality. So I love that. I think that's such a good tip.
Yeah, I mean, I can even speak that too for myself. It feels like one of the most selfish things in the world, getting to do this and work in and helping people, because it makes you feel so doggone good. And like you said, you feel like you get as much out of it as them. I would even push it even further and say, sometimes I feel like I'm getting more out of it even than them. And I'm like, well, this is crazy. Like, this isn't fair, because it's so therapeutic to your own soul. Yeah, I just love that. Get them involved in something bigger than themselves. And in, like, what I was going to say is, during the pandemic, when I couldn't smile and see someone's face and have them smile back, it directly affected my mood. It just being able to say hello in the elevator and walking down the street, like, it really affected me. So it's that connection. And anyone listening, get them to team up with some type of group. And if it's a volunteering one, I think that's one of the best things. But maybe it's a sport. Maybe it's after school thing. Maybe it's music. But get them going in that way, and that will make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you talk a little bit about the Attitude Everything Foundation and what that entails? Because I think a lot of times as parents, we need to hand the baton over to somebody else and get those skills or augment those skills with another program.
And we call that the same message, but different messenger.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's like, I'm guilty of this several times. And I have a couple of friends that are NBA basketball players, and like, everyone else thinks they're the coolest people ever, but to their kids, it's still, dad's embarrassing me again. It doesn't matter that he's, you know, a big star like that. And so sometimes hearing it from someone else who isn't mom or dad could be the exact same thing. And like I said, I'm guilty of it in my own life as an adult. Like a guy who was an athlete told me something. I called my mom. I'm like, you're not going to believe what this guy said. It was awesome. And she's like, I've been telling you that your whole life. Like, I'm done with you today. Talk to you tomorrow. And she was right, but I didn't want to hear it from my little Alaskan mom. But when it was this guy with a Super Bowl ring, it was like, oh, this is so cool. So getting mentors is a huge piece of the puzzle. And so that's what we do. We have a school program. And then we have a program where we work with families, where we work with the kids and the parents. And then we have a Facebook group that people can join, part of a community and podcasts and all that stuff. And all of that is at theattitudeadvantage.com/welcome. So we work with their kids, we meet them where they're at. And instead of the kind of a licensed psychologist, what we're doing as coaches is we're open and vulnerable on our end. So we meet the kids halfway. And I found from that, a lot of times the kids will open up a lot, because it's like kind of just naturally when you're developing a relationship with someone, when they share, you share, mm-hmm. and they feel a little bit more comfortable sometimes. So it is a great other option if you want your kid to have some more guidance and role models and mentoring.
And so that's all online, I'm assuming, the not the school, because I know you travel around the schools, but then that's online.
We do it all online. So we have kids that are all over the country, and we come together as a group on Mondays, except for on President's Day and other big national holidays. But we come in and do a lesson as a group. So there's some group therapy. So navigating some of those things like you're sharing, when it's like a social anxiety, cool, come be a part of this awesome supportive group of kids, and they have a lot of fun. And that's the other big distinction. And then we do one-on-one coaching. They go through programs, lessons each week. So there's quite a bit to it, but that's the kind of the bare bones of it.
And so for those that are listening globally, can anyone, like Australia or Canada, like, can join as well?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Very cool. I'm going to look into it.
Yeah. Check it out. I want to meet your son now after hearing about him.
I know. I'm like, this is another thing he could do. Yeah, that's very exciting. And I looked at your website and it just looks so amazing and so inspiring. And I do feel like, you know, that messenger is really important. And as a parent, we have to find other avenues to connect with our kids, including resources like yours. So I will leave links in the show notes. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing all your wisdom.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I'll leave it with this. If anyone's listening, I talked Like for years, I talked to about 10 to 15 moms pretty much a day, and they would share all the things that are going on. And if you're someone who's listening to this and you're having a tough time with your teen, I just want you to know you're not alone. There is hope. There are people like you that can help. There's all sorts of different types of resources out there. And I hope that you'll just offer yourself a little bit of grace, because I see so many, particularly moms, put the weight of the world on their shoulders and take it all as it's their fault, or they blame themselves. But being a parent is hard. Being a teen is hard. Being a person is hard. And you're not alone. There's so many other people that are going through the same things as you. So I would encourage you as the parent as well to team up and find your community, whether it's ones like we have or anyone else out there that you can have support. Because like they used to say when we were growing up, it takes a village.
Well, I hope you found that helpful. I found that he's just very inspiring to talk to. He's got really good energy, such an uplifting view of life, and I can see why he's such a motivational mentor for teens, because like you can really feel that in his energy. So check out his stuff. Go to his website at jesselebeau.com. That's JesseLeBeau.com. And then you can also go to his website, The Attitude. It's not the, it's attitudeiseverythingfoundation.org. I will leave a link for both of those and check out his work, check out his program. I definitely want to look into his mentor program. That sounds really interesting. And so if you're looking for that extra help or support, or if you're a school and you would love for him to come talk, go to his website and contact him, because is very down to earth, and I feel like our kids need to hear it from a different person. Right? So, well, I hope that you're finding my podcast helpful in general. If you are, don't forget to hit a star on iTunes or Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you consume your podcast. You know, I greatly appreciate that. My book is out now, so if you haven't checked it out yet, you can go and check it out wherever you buy your books, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, wherever. And it's called Crushing OCD Workbook for Kids. And hopefully that will fill in the gaps for some of your kids to build up their skills to crush OCD. And I hope that you find the sparkle in everything you do. And I'll talk to you again next Tuesday. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. To get additional support raising a child with anxiety or OCD, visit Natasha's online school of on-demand classes at atparentingsurvivalschool.com.